Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to do a little unusual program today. Of course, I'm going to start with the latest on health and healing. But the remainder of the program, I'm going to spend doing what I believe is necessary at this time. And that is letting people know that we should not accept a two-party system. That we should have multiple parties. And especially at this time where, quite frankly, Jill Stein from the Green Party and Gary Johnson both represent better alternatives than either Trump nor Hillary Clinton. But the media is in favor of Clinton. And almost all of our major institutions are aligning in the same way. So today I will try to share my own original, in-depth analysis of what the likely outcome of a Clinton presidency would be. I'll also be sharing insights from Professor Henry Giroux on American dystopia. I will be sharing both, and that is from The Guardian. I want you also to listen carefully to a few short news bites that I'll be playing, audio clips, that will tie all this together for you, to show you how much control the government now is exercising over you and how we're not even aware of it. I coined a term that I'm going to be using more often than not. It is called functional illiteracy. Functional in the sense that from the outside, a person may seem completely normal. They're able to function, communicate to friends and family. They seem fine. But if you start to question them or challenge them in any given area outside of their immediate expertise, they flounder. They become defensive. They become frequently hostile, non-communicative. And that is because they have put all their energy into a monotheistic view of life, a single purpose, a single cause. All other virtues are secondary. Winning is everything. Therefore, moral decisions that a normal good person would never make, these people would make without a second thought. They simply don't care about the consequences of their actions upon others. An example of that, as I'll show later, is what happens if you're president, what are you going to do about the environment? What are you going to do about our police state, our fascism that we're living by? Racial dissent. What are you going to do about it? Are you going to attack it, over-police it? Or are you going to try to understand its original underlying cause? If you are not prepared to educate yourself outside of your conditioned environment, you'll be an illiterate. There'll be so much you will not know that you'll be relying upon just the opinions of those who are almost always propagandized and conditioned. And hence today I'll be bringing both the philosophy of George Orwell with 1984 and also one of my favorites, a person who has taught us so much, Aldous Huxley, Brave New World. So I'm going to combine both of those, showing what we have is no longer an ideal liberal democracy. We have a police state. So that is the majority of my program. And at least I will have said what I had to say to show why I believe the most dangerous person on the planet, far worse than anyone else running for office, would be Hillary Clinton. And it's not because of just her. It's because of the enormous support she's getting from the oligarchs, the hidden hand of power. And she's not even hiding it. So I'll explain why others should be concerned. But let's begin. First off, ginger, from our health nutrition segment, according to Shandong University, published in the peer-reviewed journal Nutrition, is good for our hearts. Now, we knew it was good for nausea, an upset stomach, acid indigestion, yes. But this is what they're saying now. Quote, Daily consumption of ginger may reduce the risk of many chronic conditions, including high blood pressure and coronary heart disease. Quote, the data indicated that ginger had a potential preventative property against some chronic diseases, especially hypertension and coronary heart disease, as well as its ability to reduce the probability of illness by increasing 1 gram of ginger intake on the basis of prior diet. A gram is a very small amount, by the way. So if you just took maybe 2 ginger capsules, or if you took a teaspoon of ginger juice and put it into another beverage, ginger tea, it's all good for you. So good for our hearts, and that's good. Also, this is from Indian Council of Medical Research. That would be similar to our National Academy of Sciences. And this was published in the British Journal of Nutrition. They're talking about how important the antioxidants are. And they're talking about antioxidant therapy. Remember I told you a long time ago, I first began to give animals that were sick antioxidants and they got better. Then I began to see, as a rescuer, rescued over 3,000 animals, got them back to health, found them homes, that one of the ways you do it is you do it exactly as you would a human. You give them antioxidants. And vitamin C is one of those antioxidants. But if you give those same antioxidants to a human at higher doses, you can see the reversal of a lot of conditions. Here's what they're saying. Quote, polyphenols present in promising research to restoring normal endothelial function in people with diabetes, according to a review calling for more research in this potential antioxidant therapy. Now, what's that mean in lay language? It means that the endothelium is that thin inner lining of cells and blood vessels that acts as an interface between the circulating blood and the vessel wall. Just visualize a tube that water's going through, a hose. You've got the water going through it, that's your blood. Then you've got the wall of the enclosure, the hose, and that is your endothelium. Now, you don't want that to crack or break because then water will leak out. And then once it starts, it just keeps breaking more and more. Well, when you start damaging your endothelium, alcohol damages it. Chemicals from meat damage it. Chemicals from frying carbohydrates, chemicals from sugar, fructose, all damage it. Coffee damages it. So what happens is that it interferes with the circulating blood and it makes it a critical mediator within the vascular system. So endothelial dysfunction is common in people with diabetes. It's virtually epidemic in everyone with heart conditions, including high blood pressure. In fact, endothelial dysfunction tends to be the first event in macrovascular complications such as coronary artery disease, peripheral artery disease, stroke, microvascular complications like kidney damage, neuropathy, nerve damage, neuropathy for nerve damage and nephropathy for kidney damage, and then the damage to the retina, which is a retinopathy. So along come your fruits, and those fruits are rich in antioxidants and polyphenols, like blueberries, strawberries, raspberries, cherries, pomegranate. So the evidence is now very strong that the polyphenol antioxidants and the endothelium work together, like green tea, cacao, which is chocolate, red wine, resveratrol, citrus. They all work together in rebuilding the inner arterial walls, the epithelium. And that helps save your life. So let's use the simplest way of understanding that. By including more fruits, fruit juices, fruit concentrates, which is where they wick off a part of the water, so you get more concentrated, tastes stronger, but it is stronger and better for you, and the most powerful of all, the concentrated powders, where you have no water. When you're consuming these on a daily basis, you're flooding the body with the nutrients you need to protect, repair, and rebuild your endothelium. And that could help prevent a heart attack or stroke. And also from the University of California at Los Angeles, a new study published in eBiomedicine shows that sugary drinks and sweets and other processed foods containing high fructose corn syrup are really bad for your health. Quote from the University of California, the pervasiveness of high fructose corn syrup in the American diet has been blamed for an epidemic of obesity, diabetes, type 2, and related diseases. But now scientists at University of California have started to uncover the exact reasons why fructose is linked to so many ills. Researchers there have discovered that fructose actually alters hundreds of genes in the brain. Those changes are linked to development of many diseases, including diabetes, cardiovascular disease, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's disease, depression, bipolar, and attention deficit disorder, among others. But the scientists also discovered a nutrition-based natural solution, the omega-3 fatty acid, known as DHA, can reverse these harmful effects. So that's what they did. So here's the good news. Finally, what those in the nutrition field have known for decades, that sugar was bad. Now mainstream medicine is overwhelmingly supportive, yes, and that the omega-3 fatty acids can help block that and repair the damage is also good, functional medicine. I think back to when I was on network television a great deal. In fact, virtually every week I was getting a call to debate someone. And the reason I was getting the calls because a lot of people didn't want to debate. They didn't want to look bad, and I didn't care. I just figured go on with what information you can to do your homework, be prepared, and then share your information. That's all you can do. I remember getting a call from NBC Radio Network to be on the Bob Kane Show, which was a very big show. And I was going to debate a representative of the American Council on Science and Health, which is a pro-big pharma, pro-big food foundation. Now, they certainly have a right to their opinions. I don't question that. I don't judge them as people. They can be very nice people. But our debate was on something very specific. Is sugar as commonly consumed in the American diet bad? I brought a lot of good science showing it was bad. And the person I debated shared the opposite opinion. And when I think back at that time, that afterwards the host came over to me and he said, get yourself a doctorate so people are not confused who to believe. I said, well, what do you mean? He said, if both of you came on here and you both had equally good information, you saying it was bad, your opponent saying it's good, sugar, at the end they're going to trust one of you over the other. And whoever has, your opponent was from Harvard with a PhD. I said, yes. And you don't have a PhD. No, I don't at this time. He said, trust that the American public will not always know the truth, even when it's in front of them. I remember him saying this to me. And I took his advice. And today, we're still having to argue, 30 years later, that high fructose corn syrup, yeah, because there's an enormous amount of money in scientists for hire and PR firms that can spin stories that give people pause, who should you believe? And then they get stuck. So remember, fructose is bad for you. It changes your brain. It can increase your susceptibility to Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, depression, as well as cardiovascular disease. No matter who tells you otherwise, do your homework. The science is there. Go to the independent science, and you'll see for yourself. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment, the remainder of the show, a special in-depth look at the likely outcome of Hillary Clinton becoming the next president. And remember, the entire corporate liberal community is on her side. Not true liberals, but corporate liberals. And that is a huge number of power people. Please stay with us. Back in a moment.
For you.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Special commentary that I spent the weekend working on, as well as one from Henry Giroux. And I just also first want to thank you all over the world for listening live by telephone or listening device. We were just informed we're number one in the world. That's out of a whole lot of people, plus number one or two on downloading, listening live over the archives. The whole idea of a land-based station no longer is the future. It's the internet. And so if you want to listen live, Monday to Friday, noon to one, we're always here. Write down this number. And it may be a different number than I gave you last week. Keep all the numbers because ultimately we have about 10 numbers. And in case we get so busy that there's no longer room for you to get on a bandwidth, you've got another number you can call. So this week's number is 424-203-8046. That's 424-203-8046. Also, let's say you can't listen during the daytime, either to a land-based station or the internet or live, but tonight you will be able to. You can call any portable listening device and listen to the archives. 701-719-9976. 701-719-9976. I also want to thank all the good people of Colorado, Colorado Springs, Telluride, Denver, Boulder. I was out there on Saturday night. It was not in prime time. And I did a new, really hard-hitting special, real hard-hitting commentary, which was a kind of counterintuitive because Colorado is a big meat-eating state, and this film was about not eating meat. And normally they judge you zero, terrible. Five is the highest rating the station can give you based upon the how well it produces income for the station. I'm happy to say that in out of prime time, against the Denver Broncos, we did a 5++, highest in the station's history. And they've now played later in the night, Seeds of Death, and she said it's the most successful documentary in the station's PBS history out there. It was the 60th time they played the documentary, and it's still a big fundraiser for them. She said there's a large progressive community out here, and they want to know the truth. So I'm glad to hear that. This coming Sunday, the 11th, I will be producing and narrating a 7-hour nonstop special on 9/11. This is one of those historic moments you will not want to miss. All brand new information, all new revelations from the world's leading scientist. This is not about speculating who did what. It's about proving that what we were told didn't happen the way we were told. Some phenomenal new investigative reporting. Noon to 7 hours. You can listen live over the telephone or go to progressiveradionetwork.com, listen live over the air. And I'll give you the number if you want to listen anywhere in America or Canada on telephone. It's 424-203-8046. I've been working on this for some time, over a year. And it's done, and this will be the most comprehensive, up-to-date, new information. Forget everything else you've seen. This is the stuff that's been vetted and boiled down, and the best people on the planet from all over is in this 7-hour special. I'm sure many people in this audience are confused about why would anyone suggest not voting for Hillary Clinton if it meant that Donald Trump would become president. The disdain, the hate for him is palpable. Of course, if those same people really cared about having a true populist person, they would consider the platform and the beliefs of Jill Stein, quite simply the best educated of all the candidates, but also the one whose platform and positions, at least 95 of her positions, are truly progressive. But in spite of their differing perceptions of the architecture of the totalitarian superstate and how it exercises power and control over its residents, we have to take a look back go back to George Orwell and Aldous Huxley. Why? Because they shared a fundamental conviction. They both argue that the established democracies of the West were moving quickly towards a historical moment when they would willingly relinquish the noble promises and ideals of liberal democracy and enter that menacing space where totalitarianism perverts the modern ideals of justice, freedom, and political emancipation. Both believe that Western democracies were devolving into pathological states in which politics was recognized in the interests of death over life and death over justice. Both were unequivocal in the shared understanding that the future of civilization was on the verge of total domination. According to Professor Henry Giroux, and I fully concur, we now are in a complete authoritarian state. And yet, why aren't the average individuals in America seeing this? It's all around them. It's right in front of them. And they're missing it. We're not seeing it. In a moment, I'll have my engineer play a short clip. Are you watching TV or is it your TV watching you? To show you that it's virtually in every home, every apartment, every domicile, every car, every cell phone. Did you give them permission to do this? Now, when you watch Orwell or you read Brave New Universe, you think that couldn't happen. We just have too many people who are too aware. No, go back to what I said at the beginning of the program. Functional illiteracy. We are functional, but that does not mean we're literate politically, socially, on humanistic levels, spirituality, on the nature of history and its impact upon us, on our geopolitical systems. No, we are not highly literate. Both authors provide insight into the merging of the totalitarian elements that constitute a new and more hybridized form of authoritarian control, appearing less as fiction than a threatening portent of the unfolding 21st century. Consumer fantasies and authoritarian control, the Big Brother, intelligence agencies, and the voracious seduction of privatized pleasures, the rise of the punishing state, which criminalizes an increasing number of behaviors that are just normal or pathologizes them or wants your child to be put into a situation where they're evaluated to see whether or not they have the future potential to commit a violent crime or to become depressed, in which case they should be put on antidepressants today so you don't have to worry about them becoming depressed in the future. And you say, but that is my child. Isn't it my right? No. As Hillary Clinton believes, it takes a village. It takes a bureaucracy. It takes an oligarchy to control your family. And we think, okay, if you say so, who are we to challenge you? And then they say, but we need to punish you. Why? What have I done that's wrong? You've spoken out. I thought that was covered and protected by our Constitution. Well, the Constitution is not protected. Even those who claim that they're patriots still want to see the military-industrial complex dominate over 55% of all the spending from your taxes, where that same patriot may be on food stamps or having those food stamps reduced, or have a child that is homeless or working two jobs and still has to go to a food bank to get food, giving money to those who are already gorged on it, and the 200,000 corporations that feed off these interconnecting links is more important. So if you're to stand up and say that you're offended by how we're governing you, we have no choice but to consider you a threat to the state. So we've made every environmentalist a threat, every social critic a threat. We have made every institution and NGO that truly looks for the truth and helps people a threat. Democracy is a threat. Democratic leaders are a threat. Unions are a threat unless they're as corrupt as they are today at their head, in which case they'll support Hillary Clinton, no matter what their rank file want. Where at the same time that American unions are jumping head over heels to support Hillary Clinton, the world's largest strike happening today, as I'm speaking, 180 million workers, which would make it the largest employee strike in world history. School teachers, state bank employees, postal workers, miners, construction workers are all participating against whom? Where? Against Prime Minister Modi. He is the phenomenally successful, rabidly right-wing male version of Hillary Clinton. Privatize everything and support a right-wing economic agenda, but call yourself liberal or Democrat or progressive, and the media will go along with it, especially the faux media. So the strike is against the central government. The strike is for the cause for working people. So if you have those people in their trade unions, 180 million of them, all today, and nothing in the media about it, why couldn't American workers do the same thing and stop the Trans-Pacific Partnership, stop the NAFTA, stop? Well, we could do any of that. But you see, if you're the person leading that union who's going to get your union members to go against us, we have to punish you. And hence, we have to criminalize everything that at one time people thought was a given, was constitutionally protected. We're going to make virtually all human behavior a pathology. And we're going to invest in institutions that we don't already completely control to make sure that the people who are important in those institutions, foundations, think tanks, universities, colleges, that we control them. So as a result, we're going to incarcerate an awful lot of people. What we have now will be chump change compared to the future. You will see in the near future the complete collapse of democratic public spheres into narrow, market-driven orbits of privatization. These now constitute the new order of authoritarianism. You see, Orwell's Big Brother has more recently found a new incarnation in the revelations of government lawlessness and corporate spying by whistleblowers such as Chelsea Manning, or Jeremy Hammond, or Edward Snowden. All of these individuals revealed a government that lied pathologically about its intelligence operations, that everything it was doing in this manner was illegal. They spied on hundreds of millions of people who were not considered terrorists, had committed no crime, and they collected every piece of data. They even lied to us saying, oh, we only collected phone numbers. No, they actually got the entire conversations. Every photograph, every email, everything is stored. They knew that all along. They were breaking the law all along. Name me one government official in the FBI, from Operation COINTELPRO to the CIA to its Phoenix program assassinations to the National Security Agency with its breaking of the FISA rules. Name me one government agent that was sought out, brought forward, charged, and was shown a jail cell. You can't name one. But the people who brought us the information, the people who exposed the crimes against humanity, are now rotting in jails. Every one of them, or have flown out of the United States and are now considered worth assassinating. In fact, one of the so-called liberal commentators on Fox suggested that he be killed, he being Edward Snowden. So there is no room in America for someone to tell the truth in any public or corporate position and be protected, or that information to be considered relevant. So instead, if you're the New York Times and you're the lapdog of the establishment, then you attack the source and you completely avoid the information the source had revealed. And that's how it goes. So every conceivable electronic source is now stored, and it's being used to squelch content, to blackmail people, or just intimidate those who fight to make corporate and state power accountable. Orwell offered his readers an image of the modern state in which privacy was no longer valued as a civic or civil virtue and a basic human right, nor perceived as a measure of the robust strength of a healthy and thriving democracy. In Orwell's dystopian world, the right to privacy had come under egregious assault, but more than that, such ruthless transgressions of privacy pointed to something more sinister than the violation of the individual rights. The claim to privacy for Orwell represented a moral and political principle by which to assess the nature, power, and severity of an emerging totalitarian state. Orwell's warning was intended to shed light on the horrors of totalitarianism, the corruption of the language, the production of pervasive stupidity, and the endless regimes of state spying imposed on citizens in the mid-20th century. What Orwell did, he opened the door for all of us to see the nightmarish future in which everyday life becomes harsh, an object of state surveillance and control, a society in which the slogan "ignorance becomes strength" morphs into a guiding principle of mainstream media, education, and culture ethics. And if you doubt that ignorance becomes strength, why don't you try talking, and I say try talking, to the cupcake generation, the millennials, who are not just functionally illiterate, but they are comprehensively illiterate on just about everything. And so therefore, if you deny them rights, how would they know the value of not having a right that they've never used? The right to free speech, the right to assemble, the right to protest. And if the only reason you're protesting is because you feel your tuition's too high, have you not looked far enough into this issue to see, is the nature of your curriculum objective? Are you studying to take a test to pass it, or are you studying to develop critical thinking skills? Is your educational system being deconstructed so it can be reconstructed as a privatized and profitable enterprise, of which you are merely the person that is signing your name with no relevance of how education will manifest in your future? Huxley shared Orwell's concern about ignorance as a political tool of the elite, enforced through surveillance and the banning of books and dissent in critical thought itself. But Huxley believed that social control and the propagation of ignorance would be introduced by those in power through the political tools of pleasure and distraction. Huxley thought that this might take place through the use of drugs and genetic engineering. But the real drugs and social planning of late society are found in an entertainment and public pedagogical industry that trades in pleasure and idiocy, most evident in the merging of neoliberals and celebrity culture and the control of commanding cultural apparatuses extending from Hollywood movies and video games to mainstream television, news, and social media, all packaged not to help you understand issues, not to share the truth, but to exploit you as a rating number and hence as a commodity. Just think of the relevance of what you gain from watching a reality show. And then you begin to see the dumbing down process, the conditioning process. If you see enough people acting out, if you see enough people acting in bad behavior, if you see enough people not using any moral equation before doing something, how long does it take before that becomes a part of your world belief? Huxley shared Orwell's concern that ignorance is a political tool of the elite, enforced through surveillance and the banning of all this, would ultimately destroy all critical thoughts. Orwell's Big Brother of 1984 had been upgraded in the 2015 edition, and the older Big Brother presided over traditional enclosures such as military barracks, prisons, schools, and countless other big and small groups. The updated Big Brother today is concerned not only inclusion in the death of privacy, but also the suppression of dissent and the widening of the politics of exclusion. Keeping people out is the extended face of Big Brother, who now patrols borders, hospitals, and other public spaces in order to spot the people who do not fit in the places where they believe that they should be. So just imagine for a moment. Hillary Clinton has a fundraiser. True story. And it's up in on the beach near Martha's Vineyard, and it's the Rothschild estate. to get a photograph as a little kid, if you want your kid to have a photograph of Hillary Clinton, it's $2,500. If you want to have the kid and you in the picture, it's $10,000. If you just want to be there at a table, which does not give you the right to ask her any questions, it's $100,000. And you're told by Mrs. Rothschild, let's make this really nice for Hillary, no questions. And she has raised over $50 million from these people. Now, who are these people? These people are the rich and the powerful, the oligarchs. These are the one-tenth of one percenters. They're way beyond the 1%. Who else could throw down $100,000 or more to have a dinner with Hillary Clinton along with 100 other people unless you had something you needed from them or wanted or expected? And in the world of the Clintons, whoever pays gets to play. And that's what's happened, and that's what the Clinton Foundation does. That give enough money, like Saudi Arabia, $35 million, and from Hillary's State Department, you won't hear a single criticism of the massive human rights violations, killing over 5,000 children in bombing raids, over 20,000 citizens killed thus far, minimally, in Yemen, the poorest country in the Middle East, by Saudi Arabia. And they're using cluster bombs made in the United States. So we, Hillary Clinton's friends, the people will be at these meetings and dinners, $100,000 is nothing. First, it's a tax write-off. Secondly, they're making hundreds of millions in income through their surveillance groups. They may have 20 different companies all doing the same identical work. But in the world of the dystopian future, you're not allowed to ask, how much money are you making? Where are you making? Do we need that? Because we have no government accountability. We have no real government oversight. In fact, one of the people who wanted the government accountable was the former head of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. He wanted some of these old nuclear power plants closed down. And who's one of the biggest funders, the Clinton group? Nuclear power. David Axelrod, Ron Emanuel, they're all tied in. And who were one of the biggest groups supporting Barack Obama when he was running out of Chicago? The coal industry. And who came up with the concept? A PR firm, Clean Coal. But it's an oxymoron. But the public are morons, so it's not oxy. You simply tell them clean coal, clean oil, clean hydrofracking, clean nuclear, and they're not going to care. As long as you give them a good reason to eat something that's going to make them sick today. You know, like those gigantic hamburgers where you're eating a whole week's worth of protein, which is killing your liver and kidneys. But let's not talk about that because that's what you get. Because someone at one of those dinners is going to be a major, major backer, a major holder of stock in a fast food company, another in an energy company, another in a private prison company, another in let's make it easier so we can arrest people who are late on their student debt. Those are the people who attend these meals. These are the big people. How do I know? Because one of my very close friends was in that circle. And I was invited. I chose not to. I said, out of due social respect, I will never make a scene by asking an inappropriate question if I am your guest, so just don't invite me to be a guest. Therefore, I can ask the appropriate question in any other form I'm able to. So these are not the people that you want running your life, and yet these are the people who feel they have a right to. So here we are. This is the big brother that pushes youthful protests out of the public spaces that they attempt to occupy. This is the hyper-nationalistic big brother clinging to notions of racial purity and the American exceptionalism as a driving force of creating a country that has come to resemble an open-air prison for the dispossessed. This is the big brother whose split personality pretends the dark authoritarian universe of the 1% with their control over the economy and use a paramilitarized police forces on the other hand, and on the other, their retreat into gated communities manned by SWAT team security forces. Do you really think that the police, the SWAT teams, do you think the military, do you think anyone as a percentage within the armed forces are going to say no if the day comes when they have to go into neighborhoods and arrest whole groups of people? Then you're as naive as the good Germans who believed, no, these people go home at night to their husband, wives, and families. These are Christians. They're also conditioned. They will shoot who they're told to shoot. They'll arrest who they're told to arrest. And there'll be very few who have any pangs about doing it. And if they're on the hormones, which adversely affect their behavior and become hyperviolent, then you've got a lot to fear. Fear is now managed and buttressed by normalizing the neoliberal clamp on the media and then by extension to the people. It is accepted as a general condition of society, dealt with exclusively as an individual consideration, disassociated from the politics and moral panics endemic to an authoritarian society and used to mobilize the individual's fear of the other. In the surveillance state, fear is misplaced from the political sphere to the personal concerns with the fear of surviving, of not getting ahead, of unemployment, of danger posed by the growing legions of alien incomers to the United States. As the older order dies and the new one struggles to be born, what we have is a vision rightly identifying a liminal space that has given rise to our fear monsters, all too willing to kidnap, torture, and spy on law-abiding citizens while violating civil liberties. And Orwell's 1984 continues to serve as a brilliant and important metaphor for mapping an expansive trajectory of global surveillance and authoritarianism and the suppression of dissent that has characterized the last many decades. The older modes of surveillance to which Orwell pointed, including his warnings regarding the dangers of microphones and giant telescreens that watch and listen, are surprisingly limited when compared to the various means now available for spying. Right now, every time that you buy a television, a laptop, a cell phone, or you have a navigational device in your car, you're being spied upon. Think not, listen up to this, please.
What's really eye-opening here is you watch your TV, but with this hack, your TV can watch you. Show us how that works.
So one of the things that we were able to do with the smart TV platform was actually abuse the browser to the extent that we could actually gain access to the camera that's built into the TV.
Right.
And so what we can prove here is that with a little bit of extra code, we can turn the camera on in your browser.
Wow.
And while this is evident to you right here because we've designed it that way, this is something that we can do invisibly and actually have the camera running behind the web page that you're looking at.
So what this means is I could be sitting here watching TV from my bedroom, and you could be anywhere in the world looking at this image of me watching.
Yep, I could be sitting on a laptop in a cafe in Paris, and as long as I have a network connection, I'd be able to get into your TV and access the camera.
The kind of scary things about it is that it doesn't actually give any indication that the camera's on, and there is no little LED that shows up when the camera's on. So it could actually be watching you and you never even know.
What is a smart TV, and why is it a playground essentially for hackers?
Right, it's a computer. So instead of just being, you know, a tube and some other electronics, now it has a web browser and it has, you know, a lot of devices are running Linux.
But the real danger is when people start using smart TVs for things like online banking, we can take a popular bank address and translate that into a different IP address to a site that directs to a site that we control. So it may look like your bank's login, but you're actually entering a username and password that goes to us instead of your bank.
In a statement to CNN Money, Samsung says it takes consumer privacy very seriously. The camera can be turned into the bezel of the TV so that the lens is covered or disabled by pushing the camera inside.
Here's what you just heard, so let's be very clear on this. All of your smartphones, all of these electronic devices have been for some time used against you without you being aware of it. How many people have their telephone on in their bedroom or have a laptop in their bedroom? Are you aware there's two lenses, one shining out so you can take a picture, the other shining in? You can't see it. Go over now to your computer. Look at the top. Do you see a tiny little pinhole? put some black tape on it. But what kind of mindset at the national security level, at the cabinet level, at the presidential level, would have allowed this to have occurred and continue to grow to where it's virtually everywhere? Now, I want to share with you what I believe will happen if Hillary Clinton becomes president, because I don't believe that she would last very long because of her ill health. I believe that the truth will come out shortly that she has Parkinson's, and because the uncontrolling cough, which lasted her entire 3.5 minutes yesterday in Cleveland, that's not due to because she didn't have enough mucus in the throat. That's because of what happens to a person with Parkinson. That's frequently one of the reasons they die. Also, I do not believe she's had a seizure. I believe what you're seeing is a side effect of the medication, the dopa medication. That's the only medication that they can use. It's not the only protocol they could use, but it's the only medication they can use. And where they go into a dead space. And that's why when you saw that man come up on stage, that tall man who was rubbing her back saying, "It's okay, we're here. Just keep talking, and everything's all right." And then about 2 seconds later, she says, "Everything's all right, I'm just going to keep talking." She repeated what he said. And that's because once you have that condition, you go into a spatial disconnect. So you pick up with the last words that you heard. And also the concussion she suffered from, we've never seen her medical records to see what the implications have been. And knowing how pathologically the Clintons lie, until such time that she allows independent neurologists to examine all of her medical records, then the likelihood is that she has not done press conferences, because if you get multiple questions coming at the same time, if you have multiple sclerosis, if you have Parkinson's, it can short circuit you. So you go into a space where you cannot focus on a given question, in which case then you would go where the eyes would look up, be bulgy, the mouth be a gap, and that's what can happen. That is, these are all, from my personal perspective, working with an awful lot of people with Parkinson's and helping too to reverse it, I believe that until such time that we are given all the medical records, that we have to assume that the reason she has stayed away from all press conferences and all meetings with the press is because her handlers know what would happen. I also believe that the idea is to get her elected, because once elected, it would be her husband and the staff that they would surround themselves, it would be the functionals. And if it ever had to come out after that, she could always use the FDR defense. Well, but he was in office for over 13 years and in a wheelchair and blah, blah, blah. Yes. But let that be something the American public decides prior to you being elected. Now, let's just say she does get elected. There are external conditions that will contribute and benefit policies and actions that increase a police state and fascism. And she would be the leading person to advance the police state, as her and her husband already have shown. And fascism, they killed 500,000 children in Iraq. They did. They were responsible. And it didn't bother them at all. What are they going to do with climate change, since they have not supported anything that would change the underlying conditions of climate change? Why? Because the people who are paying those $100,000 for a meal with her, they're the leading industries of pollution. The water crisis and shortage, the increase in extreme weather and increased chaotic unpredictability in weather extremes, droughts and leading to crop failures, more severe floods, also crop damage, continuing demise of honeybee and pollinators because no legislation is in existence to ban toxic causes of pollinating crops and collapse. That was her husband. Food shortages, rising sea levels. What would she do, and what has she been asked to do concerning the inevitability of major communities, over 65 million Americans having to relocate because from New York City, Washington, D.C., Miami, all these major port cities on the East Coast and West Coast would be inundated. And as a result, they couldn't exist. Nothing. What about the lack of incentive and will to seriously fund rebuilding the nation's infrastructures? particularly in urban areas, in cities that are in decay, nothing. Because what did her and her husband do when they were president for 8 years? Co-presidents? Nothing. Also, what about racial dissent in slum areas? None of Hillary Clinton's supporters, her big dollar supporters, come from the slum areas. And she is loath to bring anyone into her circle who is from that environment. The rise in environmental protests. She's opposed to environmental protests. She supports hydrofracking. She supports nuclear. She supports coal. She supports oil. She supported the fascist regime, the headcutters in Saudi Arabia. Also, the stagnant job growth. Only in cheap service jobs. Our real unemployment is around 24%. The cost of living increases, wages remain stagnant. The hyperinflation in goods necessary for life, she has not addressed that. But she will say that we'll give more money to the military and defense. That's her friends. Those are the people buying the tickets. And that's what we should be cutting, not increasing. The private defense contracts will increase under her. She'll have more weapons, more planes, more ships, more redundancy, less accountability than any president in history. She wants to run the nuclear race against Russia and China. Now, how smart would it be to pick a war with Russia and China when you couldn't, after 15 years, change the Taliban's position of power and they don't have an air force, submarines, nuclear. They've got some old rifles and camels. And everything you could throw at them, you did, and you failed. So you're going to go up against Russia and China and Iran, you're going to let, I absolutely predict that Hillary Clinton would allow the racist regime running wild in the Middle East and the Israelis to invade Iran. That would create a whole new war. What about another major financial bust and collapse, which is inevitable? We have too many bubbles. We have an equity bubble, 18,000 plus. We have a credit card bubble, nearly a trillion, student bubble, trillion, 300 billion, a commercial real estate bubble. You have stagnant job growth. And also wars and regime destabilization in the Middle East will increase. There'll be probably another attempt to take out Erdogan in Turkey. And there'll be continued support for Saudi Arabia and the other terrorist states in the Middle East. And Israel will do whatever it wants and be fully supported. Our defense industry will boom financially, and no one else will benefit. War on terrorism will continue. The Patriot Act will be increased. And any discussion against the country will now be looked upon as domestic terrorist. I believe that once she's in office, within a year of her being in office, we'll begin to see the arrests of people like Chris Hedges and others in some form of perverse notion of sedition. She will expand on Obama's National Defense Authorization Bill to make it the reason that most people will be arrested. She'll censor the media. She'll try to control the internet. She will offer harsher acts against whistleblowers. You'll probably see the first execution of whistleblowers under Hillary Clinton. The military will continue to glamorize it and use 9/11 as the excuse. Entertainment, films, sporting events will promote spectacle. Already Hillary has limited her public appearances, and a secretive, if not concerned, sealed documents will increase. You're not going to have Freedom of Information Act under Clinton. You'll have militarization of state and local law enforcement. Laws will be weakened when it comes to any form of protection you have against protest. And Clinton has never in her career made it any concerted, clear statements regarding Guantanamo and torture. So she'll continue with Bush's policies. Drone industry will boom. We'll have drones over the United States and police surveillance in every community. You'll have the rise of the national security state based upon private intelligence firms. Again, her friends, her donors. You have more advanced spying and surveillance methods will be federally funded and implemented to monitor every citizen. Laws that apply to the corporate elite and the rest of the nations will continue to become more polarized to create a greater wall separating the elite from the average person, nuclear power will proliferate, hydrofracking into deep ocean drilling will continue, the U.S. military and private corporate colonization of the thawing Arctic will become more aggressive, no efforts to reform universities and institutions back to their formal purpose as institutions to develop critical thinking will become like factories for corporations to graduate new worker bees. And there'll be no effort except a small token effort to try to persuade the students that she's on their side by doing something for them on their debt, but it won't forgive their debt. Policing of public schools will become more widespread. There'll be another mortgage bubble. There'll be a collapse in the commercial real estate as spending continues to dive and more people rely upon the internet to purchase. There'll be another round of quantitative easing, which is giving free money that is worth nothing to Wall Street firms. There'll be no change in the lessening of home foreclosures. There'll be bail-ins for Wall Street and hedge funds. There'll be no change to the Federal Reserve. Efforts to move towards strictly an electronic credit card. They'll try to get away with all paper money so they can control all your purchases. The TPP will pass in a less severe form, but it'll still pass. The TTIP will likely not pass because of Europe. Hillary support both. More public lands and parks will be open for private exploration and privatization. Eminent domain will be protected and perhaps supported more for firms to increase land sales. There'll be no fundamental change in Obamacare. There'll be no effort moving towards single-payer universal health. There'll be one-size-fits-all medical paradigm. The CDC and the FDA will expand its policing for enforcement. You'll have no freedoms of choice. Vaccine mandates will increase throughout every state, and more drugs will be fast-tracked and then made mandatory. No change in GMO labeling. It will continue to be GMOs are fine, and you'll see an enormous increase in those people going to prisons and the profitability of prisons. So just remember, for those of you who haven't done your homework, Hillary Clinton will give you almost everything I just said and a lot more, including a possible war using NATO with Russia, or providing another excuse to have a war against Iran. Iran is not Iraq. It is not Syria. It's 84 million people. It's a very large place. And now that they know that they were going to be shut down electronically by the Mossad, they have countered that. So if you think you're going to go into Iran and win anything, you're going to have to be in the body bag business. But then again, if the Clintons can make a profit off that, they will. I'm Gary Null. Those are my thoughts. So think well before you think that, oh, sure, we want a woman for president, we want a Democrat for president. Those are irrelevant to what you're going to get. Thank you for listening and have a nice day.